It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Hey, it's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as 97% always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
We are here. We plan on doing a short podcast, but then we realize there's some news going on, so we will get to it. But we have a big announcement to make, which may not affect you at all, but we're very
excited.
More than
likely not.
Caffeinated Comics is now part of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. So we're part
of... We have a community.
We are part of something. We are validated as a podcast.
Yeah, I feel great.
Yeah, so we've been doing this show for 4.5 years.
Good Lord.
Just the two... Just us. Just the two
well,
of us.
Well, just us. I mean, we've had a gaggle of guests.
But now we're going to be included on a big thing. So... Our show will now appear on RadioMisfits.com. We have our own show page. CaffeinatedComics.blogspot.com will be active as an archive. You can still find our old episodes there. But everything from 27 to 17 up is going to be on Radio Misfits. So things we talked about, the Wonder Woman movie, the passing of Adam West, the Lego Batman movie, everything from this year is already on our page, and beginning next week, we will be exclusive to the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Now, what does that mean? That means you're going to hear another bumper at the beginning of the show or the end of the show that says we are part of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network, the way you would hear Earwolf at the end of Gilbert Gottfried, or Nerdist at the end of James Bonding. That's kind of the situation we're in. But the important thing that you need to know is that our RSS feed is changing. And what that means is that the place that iTunes and Stitcher are getting Caffeinated Comics is going to change. So there is a chance that your subscription will stop. So next week, you may not see your episode in iTunes or Stitcher. What you'll need to do is go back to the Caffeinated Comics page and resubscribe. It's as easy as that.
It'll be like discovering a great love all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. So the one thing we really want you to know is, yes, there will be an episode next week. We're not taking a week off to start the network. We're not stopping the show by any means.
I mean, unless like the world ends.
Yeah. So, you know? And also next week is the 4th of July weekend, but we will have it out on I believe the
4th is on Tuesday. So we'll still have
on
it
the
out
3rd,
on Monday.
Yeah. So if you don't see the episode, in your podcast feed, please resubscribe to us again. We had a discussion. You may not be affected because we are trying to do it on the back end with iTunes and with Stitcher. And the guys at Radio Misfits, Edward Silha especially, has been fantastic about it and trying to make sure that nobody gets left out. Now, the point of this is not to leave anybody out. The point of this is to find more people like you guys. You guys have been so good to us over the years. I hear from some of you every single week now.
Yeah, it's I am always humbly blown away by people be like, oh, I listen to the show and this, and it's like, aw, you guys, you know, it's just
yeah.
Like, it's great.
So obviously you are the people we don't want to lose, so that's why we're telling you first. We've already put an announcement on our Facebook page, which will remain the same. That will not change. We'll be part of the Radio Misfits Twitter feed. We'll be part of the Radio Misfits Facebook page. But we'll still have our own Caffeinated Comics Facebook page. I'll still be using it, not on my book, to talk about the podcast. We haven't discussed creating a Twitter feed for the show. We've never done it before because it's enough to get Twitter followers to my main
yeah,
feed.
I mean,
I don't want to start bifurcating it.
Right. And I don't know anything about computers.
But other than that, nothing much is going to change. You know, we'll still have a lot of your favorite guests coming over. We're always working on new guests. We're always working on great comic artists who want to come on and talk about their craft or talk about their new projects. None of that is going to change. We're going to go on and on about Spider-Man Homecoming in a couple of weeks.
Right. What's good about the network is like they don't kind of care what we do. They'll leave us unmolested. It's like when Disney bought Marvel. They were like, keep doing the thing you're doing. And, you know, they left it alone. And I think that's important is like we wouldn't join any network that was going to come in and be like, don't swear so much. And it's just like, don't tell me about my life, you know?
Right. And the company we're in is really great. The main podcast on Radio Misfits is Artie Lang. And I'm sure you guys know Artie Lang. He was a sidekick on Howard Stern for years and years and years. He starred in Dirty Work with our local god, Norm MacDonald. He was on the Norm Show with Norm MacDonald. When I saw Norm MacDonald at Caroline's, he stumbled on stage and hugged him in the middle of a joke. But Artie's great, and Artie's had really good friends of mine who have been trying to get on this show, some really great comedians. There are other shows. The Reverend Bob Levy has a show on the Radio Misfits podcast network. Our good friend Ellie Serrano, actually, who introduced us to the network, has his own show, Geek Counter Geek. And he's been doing that for a while, and he had nothing but recommendations about this podcast network, so we really wanted to be a part of it. I'm really excited. There's a lot of local Chicago podcasts. Your Chicago is one of them.
We were looking through like the list of names, and some of these podcasts sound amazing.
Yeah, there's a really cool wine podcast called The Winemakers. Vintage Space is another one. There's a Twin Peaks podcast called Wrapped in Plastic. And you can go to RadioMisfits.com and see all of their shows. And the nice thing is we come up as the first one in lifestyle because they are alphabetical. Comedy is the first one, and part of me was disappointed that we weren't in comedy, but honestly, we're a topical geek show that makes a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
We're not a comedy show that talks about the news.
Show. Yeah, it's no. But you know, a little bit.
So that's the news. As I said, we planned on making it just this announcement, so you know to do this. As I said, nothing else is going to change. It's going to sound the same. We're doing it in the same room. We do have an on the air sign that we hang outside the studio now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But that was a Father's Day gift.
Yeah.
Which nobody listens to. I call it the shut up sign for the rest of the house. If this is on, don't yell in front of the door. Because as you know, every third podcast has a toddler screaming.
Yeah, but you know, not forever though. Those kids eventually won't be toddlers anymore.
No, they'll be sulking teenagers and won't talk to anybody.
Right.
But then music will be blasting to the wall. So that's the announcement. So absolutely make sure if you do not see our episode next week, go back and resubscribe.
Please love us.
Yeah, and you know, we'll be making announcements on the caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com page. That page is not dead, but new episodes will be coming from radiomisfits.com. And I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah. So that was going to be the end of the podcast, but then
that's it.
Then the Han Solo movie went to bloody hell over the week.
Yeah, so I don't follow news anymore. Well, I guess that's not entirely true. I guess I don't stay up on like all
you
this
follow
kind
the Caffeinated Comics Facebook feed, and
that's right.
That's where
it.
All these
I've
things appear.
It's been a rough week. So
me too. By the way,
oh, well,
it's been horrible.
I'm glad we're in solidarity.
Oh, I got to go back to work right after
together.
This podcast.
It's awful.
I just finished a show at 3 a.m. and we're doing this, and I got to go back
to
work.
You know, I did ask your wife yesterday at the show. I said, what's a good time tomorrow? Because she asked, like, if we're doing the show tomorrow. And I said, you let me know when John works. And she's like, can you give him till 10 a.m.? I'm like, how about 11? Give me that extra hour, John. Yeah, I'm always looking out for
you. Honestly, you getting here at 10 is not the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a show last night in Naperville that went, it was really fun. It was really
Yeah,
well.
What was that? That was a blues... What was that place called?
It was Frankie's Blue Room.
Frankie's
it was kind of like a jazz
room.
Room
it
but
was
it
very
was,
nice.
Yeah, but it was like an older crowd, so it was the kind of people that want to see a U2 tribute band. And that's another thing. If you're local and we add people, you can always find Without U2 on Facebook and withoutu2.com, and that tells you when we're playing in the area. We tend to play the Midwest, so we'll come out to Michigan. We'll come out to Ohio. You pay us enough, we'll come out to California.
Yeah.
But
pay us enough, you should go anywhere.
Yeah, I'll go to Japan.
Right.
I'll go inside a volcano.
Right.
But it would have to be enough.
Yeah, enough. Everything has a price. You just need volcano money, John.
So, yeah, so all of this happened while the two of us were crazy, and work has been insane for me. I don't know about you.
Work, not so much. I have no control over my own life anymore. But that's been like an ongoing project of me, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's your personality.
I'm having a hard time being an adult. And I feel like I wasn't adequately prepared for that. But then perhaps nobody is. Yeah. You know, I feel like everyone's kind of winging it. Maybe that's the secret to life.
I think the fact that you had a loving family didn't help.
That I had a loving family? That it didn't help
you're
me?
You're just like, I don't want to grow up. And they're like, that's okay.
That's fine.
So anyway, in the news, it happened very, very quickly late in the week. But Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who were directing the Young Han Solo movie, which is still shooting, have been fired by Disney, which came out of nowhere. Apparently, they didn't expect it to happen.
Yeah, so typically, they don't like fire people like this, right? How often do you hear about like a director was fired?
I mean, you don't hear about it with actors as much, because you heard about it with... Doug Gray Scott was the original Wolverine and got fired. And Hugh Jackman was a replacement. Viggo Mortensen was a replacement.
But what did the guys get fired for?
So the news has been trickling out little by little.
Well, hang on a second. I mean, like, when people get fired, like, Marlon Brando refused to read his lines for Superman, and they wrote him on a diaper. And, like, do you know what I'm saying? And he still didn't get fired.
Right.
What does it take to get fired in Hollywood?
I think now that you're working a job, you'll find getting fired happens for different reasons.
Okay.
Different places. There are times.
You mean when you're your own boss and no one can fire you?
Yes. Apparently that changes your opinion.
It's different when you have a boss.
Yeah. I have been, there have been times I've been at a job and thinking, man, I got fired when half of this happened.
Yeah.
And here I am.
That's incredible.
Yeah. But so. As the story came out, it turns out now these two guys made the Lego movie, which was a monstrous hit.
Not the Batman Lego movie. They made like the Lego movie with Chris Pratt.
Yes. And then they produced the Lego Batman movie, but they did not direct it. But obviously the Lego movie was something like we have an Emojis movie coming. Does anybody think it's going to be any good?
Well, no, but Patrick Stewart is going to play the poop emoji, and I'm excited about that.
And is not going to make me pay for it.
No, heavens no.
But the Lego movie should have been that. Should have been like, all right, it's going to be a bunch of jokes about bricks. Somebody's going to poop bricks at one point.
Did somebody poop bricks in one point in the movie?
You still haven't seen the Lego movie, right?
No, I've seen bits of it, and it looked incredible.
It's fantastic. The story was great. It leaned really heavily into... how Legos work about, you know, the theme is about like originality versus following
the instructions.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that's great.
It was really good. Chris Pratt is fantastic in it.
He's great.
Morgan Freeman is hilarious in it. Liam Neeson is hilarious in it. They're playing Legos. Will Ferrell's great in it. It's Elizabeth Banks is wonderful. Elizabeth Banks and Alison Brie are the two perfect women
alive
today.
Elizabeth Banks is Hela from Thor?
No, that's Kate Blanchett. Elizabeth Banks was Betty Brant in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies.
And what else?
She's in The Hunger Games.
And what else?
And she was she directed one of the Pitch Perfects. She's great. She's done some more Judd Apatow stuff.
Is she the girl where Brendan Fraser?
She does Realtor.com commercials.
No, but Brendan Fraser like hooks up with the devil in a movie and.
No,
that's Elizabeth Hurley.
That's Elizabeth Hurley. She was in Austin Powers.
Okay.
So
I don't know anything about.
We'll look this up for you.
People.
But
I'll look it up.
She's also in the Lego movie. But it was way better than it had any right to be. And then they immediately did the Lego Batman movie, which was, again, so really great. It's not a perfect Batman movie.
Stu was talking about it last week, and I don't know who else we had on when that podcast came out, but everyone was kind of saying it was like a really good in-depth like examination of like the Batman like mythos.
Yeah. Yeah, you couldn't say it was a Batman story, but it was.
Yeah,
like,
because that's the problem with these movies.
It was a parody. It was both a parody and an examination of Batman.
Yeah, but it's also like, and Legos.
Yeah, but also compared to Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, I mean, that's arguably not a Batman movie at all.
No, and I think we talked a few weeks ago. There's a documentary on Hulu called The Man the man who created Batman.
Oh, that's the about Bill Finger. Yeah.
And the funny thing about it is, you know, half of it is a biography about Bill Finger's life. And it's fantastic. You should watch this on Hulu if you have Hulu. Which
On Hulu? It's just on Hulu. Yeah. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. I think it's called like Batman and Bill or something like this.
Yeah.
So, but half of it is a biography about Bill Finger. And then the other half of it is about his family and a fan who's a journalist trying to get him credit for creating Batman.
Yeah.
And it's about that fight. And
it might have been that fan who did this or maybe somebody else, because hopefully more than one person's aware that Bob Kane did not come up with a lot of great ideas. But it's like a comic. It's like if Bob Kane created Batman, and it's just a real quick couple panels, and it's just the things Bob Kane came up with,
and it's
like
nothing.
It's nothing. It's like a guy in a cape jumping off a roof and getting killed.
But he did like a children's book about Bill Finger that I bought, and it was really good. And then he was like, you know, we really need to. And it took him 10 years. And Bill Finger didn't have any children, and his son was gay and passed away. And then during the movie, you find out, but his son actually had a daughter before he came out.
Yeah.
And then they had to find her because illegally, somebody from the family has to petition this. He couldn't do it. So it's a lot of like legality. And obviously, this is not spoilers because we know what happens. But the funniest and saddest thing about that movie is at the end, we do have Bill Finger's credit on Batman. Now it says created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger.
Yeah.
And the big deal is Michael Uslan is a big part of this movie. And they're like, and we finally got him on a movie. And there's a big Hollywood premiere. And they invite like all of Bill Finger's family who's still around. And they're on the red carpet. And everybody's excited. And they all sit down in the movie theater. And the screen comes up. And Bill Finger's name is on it. And everybody's warm. And then the movie ends. And then you realize that movie is Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
If they had only waited another year, could have been the Lego Batman movie.
Right. What's the difference between like created by Siegel and Schuster versus created by Batman with Batman created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger?
The thing
with
Siegel and Schuster was they pitched it together and they took credit immediately.
Oh,
like they came into
Bob Kane.
They came into DC and said the two of us have this character called Superman,
right?
So and they sold it to DC together, so they were always partners. Bob Kane always said he came up with it by himself. And he went to Bill Finger and he's like, how can you fix this Birdman I've got? And he was Birdman at that point.
Yeah.
And Bill Finger's like, nah, the wings are too stiff. Let's make him a cape. Oh, let's give him pointy ears on him. Let's put a symbol on his chest.
Yeah.
You know, let's make him dark. Let's make him swing on ropes. And then as it went on, he stayed on Batman for a long time, and he was like, let's give him a butler, let's give him a sidekick, and he was responsible for
here's a car.
Yeah, and then other guys like Jerry Robinson was like, here's a villain, he's called the Joker.
Yeah.
So Bob Kane basically had a studio of like 5-6 guys, but they all worked for no credit, and back then, comics didn't have credit pages.
Yeah.
So Bob Kane just kept going into DC by himself and goes, here's the new Batman that I did, and then he would go back to the studio and pay the guys. And that was somewhat of the understanding, but also in interviews, he was like, I did it all myself. And he would tell stories about what Bill Finger did by saying, I did that.
Yeah, that's messed up.
Bob Kane was a horrible human being.
Yeah,
anyway,
like a toilet person.
Yeah, anyway, the guys that did Lego Batman and the Lego movie
got shit-canned from Star Wars.
Yes, so they'd also done 21 Jump Street, which everyone seems to love except me.
I love that movie. It was
like that movie.
I don't like...
Brie Larson's in it, who is my number three perfect person.
Is she in that movie?
She is. She's the girl in that movie.
I don't really know
she's
if I like
the girl
remember
that
movie
I think
really well.
Jonah
all I remember
Hill
is like
likes.
Jonah Hill and that muscular guy,
Musclehead. Yeah,
who's that guy? You know what? I used to hate him too, but then he was so funny in that movie, and
I didn't think he was funny in that movie.
Oh, he's hilarious.
No,
but then he was in like an end of the world type movie with James.
Yeah,
Franco.
I hate that movie.
I think that movie's funny.
But
hang on.
That movie.
But why
it's
the
most intelligent movie I've ever seen.
No, it's a dumb movie, but it's funny. But what I like in it is he's in that movie as like a weird like sex slave of like Danny McBride.
I don't think he's funny in that.
No, but it's funny because he didn't have to do that, but he was like, yeah, it's hilarious. And
yeah,
I think it's like he's got a good
it's like when
he doesn't take himself too seriously, and that really ingratiates
what
people.
Bothers me most about Channing Tatum is that he's trying to make a Gambit movie, and I'm like, you are obviously Colossus.
Yeah,
you
I don't know why
Gambit.
He wants to be Gambit.
Now, Gambit.
I mean, I think he probably just really likes Gambit, like the character.
I think
he
wants to be a superhero.
Right.
But I think Gambit needs to be like a long and lean guy.
Yeah, Gambit's supposed to be kind of like squirrely because he's
a little
thief.
Yeah, he's supposed to be
like,
kind of like a...
like a little guy. Well, not like Wolverine
like a
tiny.
Like a Dennis Quaid, Harry Connick kind of guy.
Yeah. But like, I wouldn't really want Channing Tatum to play Colossus either because, you know, he's not a Russian guy. Get a Russian guy to play Colossus.
I think you could teach him a Russian accent quicker than you can teach him that Cajun accent.
Yeah, the problem is you'd have to teach him to act first.
But he's
and
cute.
I
know. That's why I don't like him.
No, but it's so he's great.
His face doesn't do anything.
No, I know, but that's it's like he's like so pretty, but he's so stupid looking, and it's like I don't know. I think I find stuff like that kind of charming. I don't know.
Yeah, I think this is a matter of your blurry sexual preference.
I can have that. It's fine.
Anyway, the point is that these two guys who are known for making big comedies are making the Han Solo movie, which Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, and Raiders of the Lost Ark, so knows that Harrison Ford voice.
He wrote all three of those movies, and he wrote the Han Solo movie.
Yes, he wrote the Han Solo movie with his son, Jake Kasdan, who's also made some really good, interesting films, like The Zero Effect with Ben Stiller and Bill Pullman. So two really good screenwriters wrote this. And apparently, as it came out during the week, apparently what happened was that the two guys were steering it way too far towards comedy. They were encouraging a lot of improv. And, Donald Glover is in this cast.
Who's playing Han Solo? Young Han Solo? Is this like an unknown type character?
Someone unknown, but he's actually, and I'm blanking on his name. I should look it up.
I feel like he's like was in the Maze Runner or something.
He was in Hail Caesar, the last Coen Brothers movie.
Okay.
Which was really good. And he's
good in it.
Where
is that streaming?
Maybe Hulu. I bought it.
Yeah. I wanted to see that too.
Maybe
that
Hulu,
great.
Maybe Amazon Prime. It is really good. And Josh Brolin, who is going to be Cable, stars in it. And it's like.
I thought George Clooney starred in that movie.
George Clooney's in it, but he's not the star.
Oh, I don't even remember Josh Brolin in the trailer.
He plays a star. The story is that George Clooney is this big, dumb movie star who gets kidnapped.
Yeah.
And Josh Brolin is a guy who works at the studio who fixes problems, and he's like trying to find him.
Okay.
The guy who plays Han Solo is like this young kid who's made a bunch of cowboy movies. And they're trying to put him in like
a Roman,
like
gladiator.
like the thin man, like the 30s, like everyone's in a tuxedo dinner party.
Yeah.
And there's a really, really funny scene where Ralph Fiennes plays the director and he's just giving him a line reading and it goes on for like 2.5 minutes. And Ralph Fiennes does a slow burn of not trying to yell at his kid. And he's trying so hard to make this movie and nobody wants him to be in this movie. But that actor, and I am looking this up, is playing Han Solo. And when I saw that, I'm like, yeah, I'm fine with this.
Okay. But then you're saying him and Donald Glover were just doing like too much comedy and improv? And
well, the directors were encouraging it. Woody Harrelson is also in it. And Woody Harrelson can be a very dark actor. But, you know, he's a guy that came from Cheers. You know, you ask him to do comedy, you're going to get comedy out of Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, he's funny.
But... let me see his name.
It just seems unusual.
Aiden Ehrenreich. He was in Beautiful Creatures and Hail Caesar. Not a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
He did a CSI. He did a Supernatural.
So he's like a fairly unknown type actor.
Yeah, he's young. He was born in 89.
Oh, so I'm older than him.
Yeah, so he's a young guy. But he's like, he doesn't entirely look like Han Solo. But as I said, I was so impressed by him in Hail Caesar that I'm like, yeah, give him his own movie. I'm good with this. I mean, River Phoenix played a young Indiana Jones, and I was okay with it.
Yeah, I'm a very apprehensive about this movie. It's like, I want a young Han Solo movie. I think him and young Lando, like, palling around the universe being dickheads.
Right. And Chewbacca's in it.
Yeah, see, and it's like, if it's a younger Chewie, it's like, I think there's a lot of really cool stuff, but it's just like... it's the same thing. It's like replacing Indiana Jones with like a different actor. Me and Elliot fought about it, but it's like that's a really...
but a younger actor I can buy more because, like I said, they've already done with Indiana Jones. And,
right.
And River Phoenix is so good in that movie that you have to forgive his 90s hair.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
I don't know why
he's got the Kurt Cobain
split. He like wouldn't cut his hair.
I don't know. My only guess, and I don't know, my only guess is that he's only in that movie for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's possible he was making another movie where he needed that hair. And Steven Spielberg was like, all right. I was like, I guess I could see the 1910 version of that. But River Phoenix is so good in Last Crusade because he has all of Harrison Ford's subtle manners.
That's what I'm saying. The way he touches his face, good.
The way he like squints his eyes. And it's because they made a movie called The Mosquito Coast. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Well, it's an interesting movie. It's from the 80s. I wouldn't say it's held up. It's not a classic. But they play father and son in that movie.
So he's worked with them.
So he worked with him and he really knew him. And it was only about, it was in 87. So it was only a couple of years before Last Crusade. But we've already proven that can work. So I'm okay
with
somebody
like,
else doing
River
it.
Phoenix, I also think it was like a very talented actor. It's like, like I said, hopefully this guy is too. I don't know. Hopefully he is. Like Donald Glover as Lando, I think is like brilliant.
Yeah,
I think
it's great.
I wouldn't have picked it because I'm not like a smart casting person.
Would you have picked Keegan-Michael Key? Because that's Lando's sketch in Key and Peele?
No, I wouldn't have picked him.
Zeef, I gotta go.
Yeah. Outrageous.
Outrageous.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm interested. I definitely want to see it. I think it's just like that movie's coming out in like May.
Yeah, well, they are almost done shooting. So the big problem was they said they encouraged so much improv that it was moving further and further into comedy. Lawrence Kasdan was not happy about it.
Yeah.
And then eventually Kathleen Kennedy was not happy about it. And Kathleen Kennedy is basically running Lucasfilm.
She's like the Kevin Feige of the Lucas movies.
Yeah, and Lucas handpicked her. She produced all the Indiana Jones and Star Wars movies when she was like young under Hans.
Yeah.
Under
she
Lucas.
Sounds like the like a producer I'd actually like. You know, I typically like take a dump on producers.
Yeah, but she's been in this for a long, long time. So she knows the franchise.
Yeah.
And she wasn't happy with it. And the reports are coming out that they were doing so much improv and goofing around with it so much that they were starting to do stuff that was just out of continuity and out of the world of Star Wars. And it sounded like, that's a funny...
It got, too far away from the mark.
Yeah, I don't know. But, we don't know what it was, but it's like, are these guys making iPhone jokes in Han Solo movie? Yeah. It's like...
Are
they talking about Trump?
Isn't there, Cult 45? Didn't... the guy who played Lando originally.
Billy Dee Williams. He used to do Cult 45.
Cult 45. Yeah. I wonder if they were making Cult 45 jokes.
I don't
know. Throw that in there. You know what I mean? Leave it in there.
What's that gun called? It's called a Cult 45. Ah.
Yeah.
And he actually said, ah, and winked.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah.
And that's a pretty big deal to shit can like a guy like publicly like this.
Two guys.
Yeah, in a movie.
The two of them are making it. And in the middle of shooting. So then the really interesting thing was there was about a day where they announced that they were leaving. They didn't announce that they'd been fired, and then it came out. And then they were talking about who was going to replace him.
They called Joss Whedon up. Just fix movies, Joss.
Are you done with Justice League? Can you come back?
As soon as you finish fixing Justice League, come fix Han Solo.
Oh, and there's also more news about Joss Whedon changing Justice League even further. He hired Danny Elfman to do the music.
Which is like fucking duh.
Yeah.
Like, why wasn't that dude attached to that project in
but
the
think
beginning?
Think about the music in Batman versus Superman. It was going to be that guy again.
Danny Elfman
that weird
did...
techno.
Oh.
That weird techno stuff.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, Danny Elfman's going to bring
Danny
that.
Didn't Danny Elfman
like...
do Superman, the Man of Steel?
No, John Williams.
Man
of Steel.
Guy.
I'm not sure. John Williams did the original Superman.
I think
Danny Elfman did the original Batman.
I wonder who
he did Spider-Man.
Man of Steel music, because I really liked that, Superman, that theme they did in it, I really liked. That first trailer for that Superman movie was phenomenal.
Because they made it look like Batman Begins.
Oh, it looks so good, and then they fucking, It's like, they should never hire a guy who's trying to be another guy. Do you know what I mean? Zack Snyder was just trying so hard to be Chris Nolan. If you couldn't get Chris Nolan to do it, get somebody else who's like an original person.
But
Zack
Snyder's
just like a clone of him.
And that was a bad clone. And that was after Bryan Singer was trying to be Richard Donner.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's like a copy of a copy. It's like in Multiplicity. When it's like three copies of Michael Keaton and then he's just, I like pizza. You know, it's like, it's like the guy's a dope. But you can't, I don't know.
Yeah, it was not a good movie yet. Oh,
I think it was
Hans Zimmer did Man of Steel.
Yeah, it's like those three guys, it's like maybe they're all very similar.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And there was
music,
Michael Kamen, but he passed away.
Those three guys are like the chief One of those guys should always be doing DC movie music, yeah. Or whoever did the Wonder Woman theme, because that theme song was great.
I feel like John Williams, you get the classic score every time, because he did the Harry Potters, and those are great.
He did Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, that's like the greatest.
And Danny Elfman is always going to have that little bit of Tim Burton weirdness.
Yeah.
Because like his Spider-Man scores are really good. He never quite...
No, I really like those.
He never quite came up with a Spider-Man theme the way he did a Batman theme, but the music in that is good.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of like weird, like high stringing.
Yeah. Again, which is like webbing type, yeah. You know, it's like.
So now he's doing Justice League.
Okay.
So, that movie, I get more confidence about every week.
Oh, I don't mind the people they're bringing to that movie. I just think it's like, you know, you could hand like, I don't know what the good, like, example is. It's like, you know, to take like All-Star Batman and that concept and give it to like Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, and they're still going to make it a toilet book. Do you know what I mean? It's like, pick whatever creative team you want. I just think it's like, it might, that project just seems like it was way too far along for somebody else, no matter who it was, to come in and kind of rescue it.
And that's
it.
The thing, we have the same exact situation on Han Solo now.
And that's why I'm worried about it now.
80% of the movie.
It's like, this thing's in the can and they're...
So there was talk about having Lawrence Kasdan finish it, which made a lot of sense to me because he wrote it, he was having a problem with the way it was directed. He wanted to make it like the script, let him finish it. But apparently there is a Directors Guild rule that says if you fire a director, you cannot hire somebody who's already employed by the movie to direct it, which makes sense because that discourages sabotage. Because like a producer's like, I want to direct this movie.
Yeah,
you're
fire this.
Because
that's what I was going to be like, why would they have a rule like that? And it's like, oh, there you go. That makes sense.
So in about a day or two later, all of a sudden we found out Ron Howard is now directing the Han Solo movie.
I'm not a very familiar person of Ron Howard other than like Arrested Development, right? That was him?
Yeah, Arrested Development was him, but he's made tons.
No, I know he's very
Apollo
accomplished.
13 is him, and Will, and he made...
Okay, so he has done like... Because like I said, I'm an ignorant cultural vacuum person.
Right.
He has done big, serious movies.
Yeah.
Not just like Arrested Development and like comedy stuff.
Lately, his biggest ones is he's been doing the Da Vinci Code movies with
Tom Hanks.
With Tom Hanks. So he's made a lot of big movies, but they're usually like big dramas, maybe thrillers, and they're not these, like, they're not franchise films. The closest he got was actually when he worked with George Lucas and made Willow, which is not a good movie. But, you know, Willow was Lucas's attempt to create a fantasy franchise the way he'd created a sci-fi franchise, and it didn't work. But... the other thing I didn't realize until they mentioned an article, Ron Howard is also the star of American Graffiti. So he goes back further with George Lucas than basically anyone but Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Because he's in George Lucas's first major film.
Yeah, but being attached to George Lucas isn't like a positive, I'd say.
Yeah, but he knows that tone.
Yeah.
In a way that apparently Phil Lord and Chris Miller don't.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the Lego movie is kind of their own thing. And... he's done everything from comedies to dramas. I mean, you look at his, he produces and does the voiceover for Arrested Development, but the movies he's made, he just did a Beatles documentary, which was really interesting. That's now on Hulu, which is mostly editing footage. He's done all the Da Vinci Code movies. He made the Grinch. He made Apollo 13.
I love that movie.
He made Backdraft, Parenthood, Gung Ho, which is a great Michael Keaton movie. Have you ever seen that?
No.
It's a perfect mid-80s movie about, like, we got to worry about the Japanese because they have all the money. And it's about, like, Michael Keaton's, like, the foreman at a car factory in Detroit, and a Japanese company takes it over. And, like, he's got to figure out how to get along with the crazy Japanese.
Is that a comedy?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah, I want to go.
And it's a lot of Michael Keaton going, okay, we're all going to have a barbecue. And he's like very, very stereotypical, like, well, this barbecue, you're going to love it. There's a pig and there's a chicken and there's it's like 2 hours of that.
Okay.
It's like his Mr. Mom phase.
Yeah.
But he made Splash, Tom Hanks.
I don't know what Splash is.
You never seen Splash?
No.
Splash is about Tom Hanks and a mermaid. And Daryl Hannah plays a mermaid. And, like, the mermaid falls in love with Tom Hanks.
Is this a comedy?
Yes, it is.
It's amazing.
And it's, like, the early 80s. The mermaid comes to New York and she gains legs when she gets out of the water.
Sure.
And she just seems like this weird foreign girl who's in love with Tom Hanks. And John Candy plays Tom Hanks' brother. So you got Tom Hanks and John Candy in the same movie.
Yeah.
It's good. I haven't seen it in a long, long time. It seems like something that would be on Amazon Prime right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, before that, he was obviously primarily known as an actor. Happy Days was the biggest thing
right.
for, you know, 12 years, and he was the star of that. And there were immediately memes like, oh, yeah, Hans Hall's going to be Fonzie. But it's like, yeah, you're kind of stretching.
Yeah,
and,
I think that's
And
a,
there were also
a
million
silly.
Memes, which were funny once, of somebody put, like, Ron Howard's Arrested Development voiceover over the cantina scene.
Like, oh, yeah, but
like,
that's
you know, it was, like, very, like, you've never heard of the Millennium Falcon? He hadn't.
Yeah.
It's like, it's funny, but then everybody did it, and it's like, okay, it's 10 minutes later, it's not funny anymore.
Yeah.
It was the easy joke to go to.
So
I don't know, but that's the thing we're talking about now, is this is happening more and more. It's happening right now with Justice League, and it's happening with Han Solo. And part of what's happened in the articles is they talked more about Rogue One. And not only did Rogue One really change in that third act, which we noticed, but Gareth Edwards didn't direct that. So they brought in Tony Gilroy. They brought in another director.
So is this just like studios trying to do these like huge projects with all this like tie-in bullshit to 17 other movies and directors having a hard time kind of like toting that line and then just getting shit-canned?
Yeah, I think it is. I think what we're entering into is we're leaving the director as auteur kind of role in Hollywood where the director's the creative vision and owns everything.
Yeah.
Because these franchise films are so interconnected and there's so much pressure on them. And we're entering a producer's medium because people don't talk about the directors of Marvel films the way they used to. I mean, you have somebody like James Gunn who's kind of doing their own thing, but the Marvel franchise is in the hands of the Russo brothers who are known as television directors. So they know how to do it fast to execute the producer's
right.
vision.
But I think a lot of it is like, you know, if you look at the hierarchy of Marvel Studios, it's like Kevin Feige is like the final law. Essentially, it's like this guy's the guy that like if he says it has to look like this, it has to look like this.
Right. And,
you know, they've got a guy kind of steering the ship.
And that's traditionally the director. I mean, when George Lucas was making his Star Wars movies, you know, from the original trilogy and the prequels.
Yeah.
Was, you know, the producer was the guy who would try to get something done where he'd be like, I need 5 Tauntauns. And the producer's like, I can't afford 5 Tauntauns. Get me 5 Tauntauns.
Yeah.
And then he goes and makes the deal. Like the producer's not going to go, you get 2 Tauntauns, shut up. And we're getting more towards that where Kevin Feige's like, look, you can't have the original Guardians of the Galaxy. You can have, you know, you can have Sylvester Stallone as Starhawk.
Right.
You know, and in the early days, the director would be like, no, like, you know, Tim Burton, I'm sure Tim Burton didn't have to talk to, Tim Burton had to talk to Warner Brothers a lot about certain things, but if Tim Burton wanted Harvey Dent in the original movie to be played by Billy Dee Williams, there was no producer coming from DC's like, no, we're saving Two-Face for this movie, so you have to have this actor's got to play him, and he's got to say this, and he's got to be in this.
Right.
And
if Tim Burton wanted to, for instance, have the Penguin be like a horrifying thing that would scare children forever and bite people's noses, and you know, have like black blood, there wouldn't be anybody to rein him in. You know,
yes.
He just got to do these crazy things,
and that's why we have Batman Returns,
right. Because there wasn't producer oversight.
Which the more Batman movies we get, the more I appreciate Batman Returns because no one's ever gonna make a Batman movie quite like that ever.
No, yeah, that's
again.
Kind of like the perfect storm of insane superhero movies.
I feel like you walked onto the set of Batman Returns and there was music coming from somewhere and you didn't know what it was, but the music was going like in between takes.
Right.
So I don't know if this is good or bad. Rogue One worked. That third act was a little convoluted. But had the original movie come out, it might have been worse. I mean, we're kind of...
Yeah, you're always kind of playing that, like, what movie didn't we get game?
Right.
You know, all we ever have is like, well, here's what Batman Returns look like. Or Batman Forever is a good example of, like, what would a third Tim Burton movie look like with Riddler and Two-Face?
Right.
That wasn't Schumacher.
Right.
What
would a fourth Sam Raimi movie look like with John Malkovich as the Vulture?
Right.
You know, we can always play that what-if game. And now we're at a point where... It's almost like those movies exist because then the producers come in and get somebody else to finish it. It's like we're going back to the old Hollywood system. We were just talking about Hail Caesar, where the executives ran everything and the directors just came in and were hired because they had a certain style, and which is a lot of what Hail Caesar is about. Or Barton Fink, which is another movie they made about old Hollywood, which is a great film. We're kind of going back to that. And I think it's necessary. You know, Edgar Wright worked on Ant-Man for 8 years and then walked away.
Yeah.
That
was supposed to come out when Iron Man came out.
It was supposed to be one of the first ones. And it didn't come out until after the,
and think about
the second Avengers.
Had that come out when Iron Man came out, the Avengers movie would have been Hulk, Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Ant-Man, the Wasp.
Yeah.
Instead of Hawkeye, Black Widow.
That was the original plan.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, those, when you go back before Avengers, they made the big three.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Well, the big four, because I keep forgetting about,
Hulk counts.
And you know what? I watched it again because they had it. I've been addicted to iTunes sales, and that is my advice for everybody.
That's a strange thing to be addicted to, John.
Well, because stuff randomly shows up for $5, and I'm like,
who can say no to a sale?
I'm like, I have that disc on my shelf. I'll sell that disc. And so I ended up watching the Ed Norton Hulk again. That's a good movie.
I like it. And it's, you know, it's in continuity because my roommates are watching S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. She's like obsessed with it. So she's got her girlfriend right, and they've been going through all the episodes. And I was listening to it because I was in the other room, and they said, Phil Coulson says to one of the characters, it's like, if you break protocol again, I'll have you guarding Blonsky's cryo cell in Alaska.
Yeah.
So it's like they repeatedly mention that they've got the Abomination like in a cell somewhere.
Yeah, and
so
Glenn Talbot is a big part of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, he's in Civil War. So it's like this, it does.
Well, Thunderbolt Ross is in Civil War.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like all those characters
and he,
from that Hulk
movie.
Yeah,
he plays them both. But Glenn Talbot, who was like the rival for Betty Banner's
Oh, yeah, he wasn't
interest. He's a big part of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
He's in a lot of episodes.
But and there's a rumor that the girl that played Betty Ross in that Hulk movie is going to be in Infinity War.
They said that Gwyneth Paltrow and Jennifer Connelly will be in it. And I was like, oh my God, Betty Banner's in it. And then I realized, no, Jennifer Connelly was Betty Banner in the Ang Lee Hulk. She was Betty Banner in the Eric Bana Hulk.
Oh.
It was Liv Tyler who was Betty Banner in the Ed Norton Hulk.
I heard that she was rumored to be in the movie, though.
Liv Tyler?
The Betty Ross from the Ed Norton Hulk is rumored to be in the next Avengers movie.
I don't know. I feel like that's miscommunication because I have not that. And I heard that Jennifer Connelly was, and I had to check myself because
We've had two Betty Rosses in 5 years.
Because she was Betty Ross in the 2003 Hulk.
Yeah.
And you know, Liv Tyler and Jennifer Connelly look a lot alike.
I couldn't tell you which one was which, to be honest.
Jennifer Connelly was in Labyrinth. Liv Tyler was in Lord of the Rings. Does that help you at all?
Ish. Those both were so long ago. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, we'll see. Well, so this is another weird thing. Somebody at the store was telling me, I don't know who, because there was like too many people around for me to keep track of with my meager mind. And
that's the opposite of a beautiful mind.
Yeah, my meager mind.
Jennifer Connelly is clearly not in your life.
No, she isn't.
Stephen Brown stars in a
Jennifer
meager
Connelly-less.
Mind.
Somebody was saying that Han Solo movie is coming out the same month as Avengers Infinity War.
I can't see that happening.
That's what I said.
They're both Disney properties.
Right. That's how confident they are. They're just swinging their giant brass balls around. I mean, that's insane, right?
No, I wouldn't be surprised, especially with Ron Howard taking over, that they would give him extra time. The Star Wars movies have been coming out at Christmas.
I know. I agree.
I would not be surprised if this gets pushed back to be the next Well, this Christmas is going to be The Last Jedi.
What do they call that Han Solo movie? Is it?
It doesn't have a title.
Doesn't have a title.
In fact, on IMDb, it still says Han Solo Anthology Project, which is weird because if they're so mad about the Lego guys changing the script, but they don't have a title to the script,
all right,
how locked down is this script?
I Googled Han Solo movie release date, May 25th, 2018.
That's ridiculous. By the way, is it the fact that we're now on a podcast network that we're willing to look up our facts for once?
We gotta know what we're talking about, John.
We're not just like, this is going on. But, well, that brings us to the other thing. This is really going to be a full episode.
We're going to go all over the place.
Talking about these interconnected movies that came out this week.
May 4th is Avengers Infinity War release
date. So like
two weeks
difference.
I mean, that's like I'm saying. It's like they're insane because they're just like, we're just going to own an entire month's worth of movie profits. Yeah. And probably 2 months, right? Because you know, and, I don't know. I think it's insane.
DC doesn't have anything ready by then because Justice League is November.
Is that the only DC movie coming out next year?
I don't know what the timeline of these anymore. Well, one of the rumors is that Phil Lord and Chris Miller might go back to The Flash. They were the first directors to work on The Flash. And then they left, and then we had another director, and he also left, and there's no director for The Flash now. So it's possible that they might come back.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing for DC, I don't think, because Justice League is in November, I think, right, this year?
Yeah, and the Batman keeps moving, the Ben Affleck Batman movie. We know that's going to happen.
That he's not even, like, directing it anymore.
No, he's not directing it, but he's acting in it. But it's the Matt Reeves who directed the new Planet of the Apes. So I'm confident in that, at least, because I like those. We always talk about how much we like those movies.
And then forget they exist.
Yeah, but I love that about them. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, I like those movies. Let's go
see
it. It's
nice because they don't have to take up any brain space.
It was the anti-Alien Covenant, where it's like, oh, I like Alien movies. Don't like this one.
Yeah. Yeah, so the other big news, well, I don't know if this is another where we were going, but this is interesting to me. Watchmen is going to be like an HBO.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is that confirmed or is that still a rumor?
Damon Lindelof is working on it, who did Lost, and he just finished The Leftovers.
Okay.
So he's working on it.
But it's for HBO?
It's for HBO, which I think is the only way you can do it because obviously
it has to be like
future film didn't work.
Or something. The film.
No, it's HBO. It's definitely HBO.
No, but I'm saying it has to be on like a network that's like allows like.
It's got
to
be cable, like American Gods right now, which is excellent.
I know. I've got to watch it. I've heard it's great.
I don't know. I'm one behind, so I don't know if it's ended or if there's still a couple more.
I think it's ended, I thought. Somebody was mentioning it.
But it is coming back for season two.
We'll do a.
But see, Watchmen has got to be a miniseries because you can't get to the end of that book and then go and season two of Watchmen.
No. Do one season, 12 episodes, every issue is an episode.
Yeah.
Don't play games with...
Well, they did a version...
And go nuts this time. Do the big spoiler. Do the big octopus monster at the end. Don't pull like...
Right.
You know, don't change it. If you have 12 hours to tell that story, tell it like the comic. I'm sure Alan Moore's thrilled about this.
Well, if you... Yeah, he's thrilled about everything.
Somebody put a microphone in front of that guy's face and let's hear him
ramble.
He did
Simpsons.
Yeah.
I think we talked about that. Alan Moore did a Simpsons once where he was at a convention and Melrose is like, Alan Moore, I like Watchmen, but I really like the animated series Baby Watchmen.
Then you said, didn't they
do an
intro?
He holds up a poster and they're like, Baby Simpsons Watchmen.
Yeah.
And then Alan Moore starts screaming at Milhouse. Yeah, I think it's a good way to do it. Damon Lindelof doesn't always have the greatest track record, but it's interesting, and I think with Westworld working really well, I think I'm sure HBO is looking for something like that, and this would fit the bill.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of makes sense. I get why we got the Watchmen movie a couple years ago. I think that kind
actually, it's like 8 years ago now.
Yeah.
2009, we got that movie.
That's wild.
And it was Zack Snyder.
Right, and I'll give Snyder credit for making that a mostly cohesive like movie, you know? It's, like, not great, but it's, like, that was considered unfilmable as a movie, they had
said.
But
years and years ago, Terry Gilliam was working on it.
Yeah.
And,
well, a lot of people, they've been trying to make that movie since, like, the 1990s.
They've been trying to make that movie since the book came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, since I remember reading articles about it in the 80s, because I remember reading articles about the Tim Burton Batman, which was coming out, and they're like, and we're also working on Watchmen.
Yeah. Fucking 20 years later.
Yeah, but Terry Gilliam came to the conclusion after working on it for a couple of years. He goes, you can't do this in 2 hours. This needs to be, and I believe he said, an HBO series.
Yeah. I remember when the Watchmen movie came out, we were talking about, I mean, I don't know if we were because we didn't know each other.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, I remember talking about it with like guys who were at the comic shop was like, yeah, it's like there's no, why a movie? It's like it kind of always made sense. It should be a miniseries on HBO. And now with like Game of Thrones and Westworld and these much bigger shows.
That movie moves so fast that you don't get to know any of the characters.
Right.
And the most painful thing about that movie was I saw it with my wife and I saw it with my my neighbor.
Yeah.
And with both of them, they hadn't read the book. And then, you know, the argument always against when anyone makes a bad movie out of a good book, people are like, well, the book's always there. You can always still read the book. It's not like it's been replaced. But both of them had the same reaction when we left. They were like, that wasn't that good. I was like, yeah, but you should read the book because the book's a masterpiece. And they both said, no, I get it.
Yeah.
And so those are two people turned away from reading this
and
book.
And I get that that's probably Alan Moore's like chief complaint about this is like he's salty that like people aren't going to watch the movie instead of reading this book that's much better than the movie.
Right.
And
it doesn't reflect all the work he put into it.
Yeah, I got the artist edition for Watchmen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's like unbelievable. And then it was like, oh, I don't own. I probably like loaned it out and never got it back in like high school or whatever. So I had the Absolute. We had like some deal and I got it. And it's like, it's unbelievable. It's like a great. And it's a book I hated when I was
there. There was a crazy. Oh, really?
I couldn't get behind Dave Gibbons' art. I'm like, this guy's art's boring. Really? I didn't like it. Well, the same thing. It's like George Perez, Dave Gibbons, Jack Kirby. I hated all those guys when I was a kid because I was a dope. And now it's like I'm a little bit more intelligent, marginally.
Jack Kirby and George Perez took me a little getting used to. Yeah, but like, Gibbons I liked right away, and I liked the fact that he was so straight ahead because the story is so out there and weird that he grounds it.
Yeah.
And most of his other work, I mean, he did a long run on Green Lantern and came back for Green Lantern Corps.
I think it was like it's not pretty art, you know? It's like it's not like
he's kind of like Steve Dillon. Where it's like he's telling that story and he's not trying to put his style into it. He's just trying to tell that story. But the story is so intense that anybody who came in stylistically
would be a nightmare.
Would ruin it.
Yeah, the book only works because I think Dave Gibbons was drawing it. That book could have been ruined by, I mean, pick an artist and it wouldn't have been. It would have
been ruined by Jack Kirby.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's like
you needed somebody that you
has
needed,
to fit the stylist.
The artist needed to be the bass player of that book.
Yeah,
like he just needed to hold things down, and his storytelling is impeccable. So I'm interested. I'll watch the first one. I mean, it's like Westworld. I felt this the exact same.
Did you watch
same,
all of Westworld?
I did, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I love that show.
But I wasn't excited about it. I was like, yeah, because Westworld was a book by Michael Crichton, who wrote Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
But it was also a movie in the 70s with Richard Benjamin.
Yeah, that's my
And Yul Brynner. Yul Brynner played, like, the evil robot. And it's a simpler story where it's like, it's not like the James Marsden robot of trying to reconcile who he is. It's like, he's just a robot that goes crazy and starts killing people. And there's a whole Simpsons about it in Itchy and Scratchy Land, which is a parody of that original movie.
Oh, yeah, I remember that episode.
Yeah, it's a great episode. So I was like, really, you're going to take a movie and do, like, a whole series? But then what I loved about that series was that they kind of did what Ron Moore did in Battlestar Galactica, but they did it better and they went deeper. And I remember I was recommending Westworld to my dad when it was a couple of episodes in, and he was like, he goes, well, you know, I liked Battlestar Galactica, but, you know, it got distracted. And what I really wanted it to focus on was, are the robots really alive because they've been created by people and they're programmed, but aren't we programmed? And can they choose? And they didn't really get into that in Battlestar Galactica. And I was like, you need to watch Westworld
That's
now.
The entire show is about.
Yeah, and he loves it. And yeah. I think that was his favorite show.
And that's coming back,
critic.
Right?
Yeah, they were doing a season two
that
of that.
That is amazing.
So I think it can sit alongside it. I've already seen this story botched, so I can't get too excited about Watchmen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited in the sense of, like, who are they going to cast? What's it going to look like? You know, I'm sure the effects will be much better. You know, I want to see it as a longer production, but it's like, if it never came out, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it either. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, cool, they're going to do a Watchmen as a show. They should do it as a show. And then, you know.
Well, it's kind of like if you weren't a diehard Lord of the Rings fan, and you're like, yeah, they already made a crappy animated movie out of that book. I'll just read the book.
Right.
And I'm sure there were a lot of people.
They'll probably
like that.
Make a Lord of the Rings show like in 15 years. HBO is going to be like, all right, let's make Lord of the Rings the book and just do like a fucking
As long as those
show.
Movies were, they cut a lot out.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. There's a lot more, and like you could definitely make them breathe.
You could do Tales from Middle Earth of just all the other stuff.
Right. Get. That's what I'm saying. For Endless, if they're looking for like a Game of Thrones replacement, wasn't there like one other big thing of news comics that.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were going to mention this while we were talking about interconnected films, is that Sony has announced that the spinoff movies they're doing for Spider-Man, and they are doing Venom. And they are doing, I believe it's called Black and Silver. It's a team up of the Black Cat and Silver Sable, which I imagine is going to come out around the time that DC is doing Gotham City Sirens.
I'll take a little wager here. That movie never comes out. The Venom movie, maybe. Black Cat and Silver Sable, we will never see that movie. Guaranteed.
I'll give you that. Well, they made a big deal about Felicity Jones being in Amazing Spider-Man 2, who ended
she
up...
She was supposed to be, like, Black Cat.
She was supposed to be Black Cat, and she ended up starring in Rogue One, but then that movie
Remember
never
when
happened.
Anne Hathaway was going to be Black Cat, like, a million years ago
and then
in
became
Spider-Man
Catwoman,
3?
So who cares?
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's like, that movie's never going to happen.
Yeah, but...
I'll eat this microphone.
But Tom Hardy is making a Venom movie right now.
But that's going to be in the Marvel... It's going to be produced Sony, but it's going to be in the Marvel Universe. So, like, potentially he could, like, fight Iron Man.
Yeah, so I think it's – well, potentially, but I believe
– I mean, probably Spider-Man.
Well, they announced that this is the only Spider-Man movie Robert Downey Jr. is going to make, and good, because Iron Man's not a Spider-Man character.
He shouldn't be.
Let's have a team up, and then fine.
Right. I'd kind of prefer it if he wasn't
and
in
I don't
this
think
movie.
I don't think we're going to get any Avengers in the Venom movie. I don't even know that we're getting Tom Holland in the Venom movie. Well, you know,
so
it could just be like
this movie gonna be about Venom running around.
I mean, Venom has his own book a lot, so
I don't know. Is that book?
But
ever
it's obviously gonna be. They're gonna have to come up with a reason for the symbiote without it being Spider-Man first,
or without it coming from a machine that. Is on like a planet that's made up by like a cosmic being that
where all the superheroes are fighting.
Right.
Well,
I wonder if it's going to be a moon rock.
Yeah.
Moon rock juice.
Yeah. That was like the solution. 90s. That was also the solution in Spider-Man 3.
It's an easy solution. It just lands, have it be this like meteor.
It just lands in the park.
Yeah.
But Tom Hardy's playing Venom, which I think you were concerned about and I was excited about because I want Tom Hardy to be like Bane big
and do the Bane voice for Venom.
We are Venom.
Yeah.
We want to eat your brains.
I'm saying you just go for it. That's your thing now. You do that voice.
Yeah, I think it could be good. I mean, Venom, the anti-heroes are tough, like Venom, Punisher. Deadpool's easier because Deadpool's funny.
Yeah.
But you have these characters, they're like, they're evil, but they fight guys who are more evil, and that makes them good. It's always a tough sell.
It's not a tough sell, I think. I think it works very for like a very short amount of time. You know, you could do 6 issues of that, but like 60
a
issues
monthly.
Of The Punisher is like Garth Ennis did it, but it's like that's a dark book, you know?
Yeah.
It's like it's humorless.
Yeah, well, one of the times Chuck Dixon was on the podcast, we talked about Punisher, and I was like, well, how do you do that? How do you make a bad guy the hero? And you say, well, he's a villain in his own book.
Right.
But he doesn't know it. You're just spending way more
time. Yeah, I mean, any good villain shouldn't know he's a villain. Lex Luthor isn't sitting around being like, I'm so evil, you know?
Yeah, so I'm hoping part of the MCU just means it doesn't contradict anything that's going on in the MCU. The way the X-Men do with, like, having 2 Quicksilvers, you know, and having a Scarlet Witch hanging around.
Yeah.
And very disparate versions of the same character. Of course, they've also done that with, say, Emma Frost.
Right.
And Cyclops.
Professor X dies and then comes back in another body and he's fine and there was no explanation.
And he has hair. Now he doesn't have hair. Now he's walking. Now he's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're almost as much of a mess as the X-Men comic books are.
Yeah, I feel like it's an homage.
Yeah. It's great.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week. I'm a little late to this game, but I finally saw Get Out yesterday. We initially planned on seeing it when it was in theaters and everybody said it was great, and then at the last minute my wife and I ended up seeing John Wick 2 instead, which is also good. And I think we were more in the mood for that than a horror movie, but I know everybody said it's great, but right now it is only $9.99 on iTunes. And as I said, I'm following iTunes.
Yeah.
So for the price to go see it by yourself, and honestly it's like $6 to rent it on iTunes. So I was like, you know what? Everybody said it's great. This is the kind of thing where 5 years ago I would see it in Best Buy for $12 and I'd be like, okay, people say it's great, I'll buy this disc. I'm starting to do that digitally. And I had to run out to do the show and I was squeezing it in because I couldn't stop watching it, not only because it was so good.
That's like a thriller, right?
Yeah,
it's like a horror movie.
It's a horror movie, but it's not that violent and it's not that creepy. And honestly, it's not even that supernatural. But it is one of those movies where you're like, for the first half an hour, you're like, something weird's going on here. And then for an hour, then at the hour mark, you're like, I don't know what the fuck is going on here. And neither does the main character. So it's not like a surreal thing where you're
right,
lost
it's like you're lost
member.
With the character.
Yeah, he's trying to figure it out. And then I'd say about an hour, 10 minutes, and I will not give spoilers for this, but an hour, 10 minutes, when they explain what's going on, you're just like, oh, God damn it. It's like this great sinking feeling, and then the rest of the movie is like, now that I know what's going on, you need to not be here.
Yeah.
Hence the title. But it's fantastic, and I think, you know, it's Jordan Peele's first movie. And it's a straight up horror movie. He said in interviews he is not in this, and he said because
that was deliberate, right?
It was deliberate because he said if he showed up in it, people would start. He was afraid people would think it was a parody or that it was a comedy. There is one character who's comic relief in this who is hilarious. He's like the friend of the main character,
yeah.
And he'll just come in now and then, like he'll call him up and he'll be like, "Things are weird here," and he's like, "I told you them white people." he gets like four or five scenes. He's like the concerned friend. There's always that, like,
yeah,
like, hey, something's going wrong with my friend. I got to get help for him. But that's the only comedy that's in it. Bradley Whitford is really great in it. And he's also in Cabin in the Woods. So he's in two horror classics this decade.
Yeah.
Catherine Keener's really good in it. Allison Williams, who is in Girls, is really good in it. And it drove me crazy for an hour because she's got this different haircut, so she looks totally different than she does in Girls. And I was like, who does she remind me of? I know who she is, but who does she remind me of? And I realized she looks like Amanda Peet in this movie.
Yeah.
Who's great. Who just finished Brockmire, which was a show I adored. And now that I said it out loud, I'm like, I don't think I've talked about Brockmire on this show. that's the show where Hank Azaria plays an alcoholic baseball announcer. And yes, that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, he's great.
If you want to see Hank Azaria play an alcoholic baseball announcer for 8 episodes, yeah, it's everything you hope that'll be, and Amanda Peet's in it, and she's great. But it just kept me until the end, and it literally, like, I had to get ready to go. So because it was iTunes, I paused on the TV, and I brought the iPad into the bathroom, and while I'm doing my hair, I'm watching another 10 minutes of it, and while I'm putting on my shoes, I'm watching another 10 minutes of it, because I had to find out how this movie ended.
Yeah.
It's worth everything everyone has said about it.
It's got like a 98% of like Rotten Tomatoes, right?
It deserves it.
Yeah, that's incredible. So I actually haven't read anything new that we haven't already talked about, but there's they just released maybe 2 weeks ago JLA Year One in hardcover.
Oh, nice.
Yes, and I had the trade, so I brought the trade into the store and swapped it out for the hardcover. And there's like three books that are kind of like,
I think
this.
I'm going to do that with you.
Yeah, it's a great book. It Barry great Kitson book, yeah. Does a lot of the art.
Barry Kitson does all the art, doesn't he?
I think there's another guy in it. I can't remember because it's like I have it. I'm like, I've only like two issues.
Yeah,
in.
And Mark Waid writes it.
Right, but there's like three books that are similar to this, that it's like this genre of like telling modern day origins of a team like the Justice League or the Avengers, but setting it still in like the 60s or whatever. They did JLA Year One, which is, I mean, essentially goes through the first year of the Justice League comics. They have like the same goofy ass villains they fought in the 60s, but like here's all this like behind the scenes stuff with like these characters. And they did Avengers, I think it was called Earth's Mightiest Heroes, where they did it, right, where it was like in the first year. And then they did, Phil Noto drew one called Avengers Origin, which was, I think, a 5 or 6 issue miniseries that took place inside the first issue of Avengers. Hmm. So it's like the whole, it just kind of expanded the story.
There's a few more. I mean, New Frontier fits in there.
Yeah, right.
And The Golden Age by James Robinson.
Yeah, that just got re-released.
And
in
then there were two Spider-Man series that kind of do the same thing.
Chapter One?
There, no, Chapter One's kind of more revisionist.
Oh, what's that?
It's more of a retcon. Dan Slott did one called Learning to Crawl, which is pretty good. It was
those were the backups, right?
Yeah, it was a 5-issue series, but it was an origin story.
Yeah.
And then better, as much as I love Dan Slott, but Kurt Busiek did Amazing Fantasy 17, 18, and 19, and then Untold Tales of Spider-Man.
Right.
And that book is phenomenal. That book is so good that you can find the entire series in back issue bins for 50 cents, which I did, and then turned around and bought the omnibus.
Yeah.
Because it's that good. That's probably my favorite of those kind of things.
Yeah.
And obviously Frank Miller did it with Batman Year One.
Right, and that's probably one of the best too. But it's like the idea of going back and telling these like older stories, with like this added perspective, you know, because like, yeah, those original Justice League of Americas are coming out, they're awful, they're not good, but it's like all the elements for it to be great are there. They're great characters, they have great good looks. It's like the villains are a little shitty, but like Shaggy Man's a funny abominable snowman, yes, monster to fight. But I love books like that, and it's like it's now put me in the mood to like reread a lot of like old Avengers comics, and it's just like I feel it's like coming where it's like fuck, I just read up to like issue 300 like 2 years ago, and it's like now I'm like I'm gonna fucking go back and do it again, aren't I? It's like it's awful, but yeah, those three or four books of like in that genre of like I don't know what you'd call it, but like they're excellent stories,
yeah,
when done correctly, and I think every one of those in their own way kind of really nailed it.
I didn't realize year one came out in hardcore. I may have to upgrade my trade as well. I've had my trade since the 90s.
Right. Yeah, that's when I bought mine. It was like I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know who Mark Waid was, but it's like, oh, I like the Justice League, and it was like I was hooked.
Yeah. Yeah, I've just been rereading the Greg Capullo run of Spawn, and we're not going to get into that because I don't want you to yell at me.
Yeah, I'll spare you.
But you know what, guys? This is it. This is the last independent Caffeinated Comics.
Yeah.
Next week, we will be our premiere episode on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. So make sure, again, I know I've said it several times, but if you do not see our episode in your feed next week, go and resubscribe to it and go to Radio Misfits. Our page is already there. If you go to Radio Misfits and you click on Lifestyle, we are the first podcast. If you put in Caffeinated Comics in the search, you can see our last few weeks. In fact, our memorial to Adam West is already up there, and I believe our Wonder Woman review is already up on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Thank you guys for being so supportive of the show. So we've had a small, loyal audience, but very loyal and becoming more vocal over the years. We've had some really nice breaks. As we always mention, we've had some really good guests who have been generous to be on the show. We got a mention by The Nerdist a couple of years ago, which was a big deal.
On an Alice and Jenny episode.
Yeah, we were just talking about Alice and Jenny.
She's incredible.
And Chris Hardwick made fun of us.
I never liked him.
I liked him because he's
a charming man.
I liked him because he mentioned us.
Yeah.
And he's also given our good friend Mike Lawrence, who's been on the show several times, he's given him some really good breaks.
That's true.
So we have to be appreciative of Chris,
yes,
Hardwick.
I'm just gonna be salty.
There have been a lot of really cool, exciting things that have happened with the show there, and we always have big plans.
We got invited to conventions.
We've spoken at conventions. We've had people like Gene Haught come over.
Yeah.
It's been a really, really great run, and this is certainly not. It's not the end. It's not like the end, and we're going to a new place. I was trying to think of shows that changed networks and got better, and I was like, there was
Futurama.
I was like,
Futurama changed networks like 16 times?
Yeah, Futurama's good. Most shows got worse, and I was like, Buffy, nah, those last couple of seasons aren't that good. And
yeah.
I was like, Politically Incorrect. Bill Maher kind of became an asshole.
I like his show. I like watch it every week, but I don't like Bill Maher.
No, he's not likable.
He's too like arrogant and just full of himself,
you know? Yeah, it was hard for me. I was thinking of shows that switched networks mid-run, and a lot of them weren't. Even a lot of the Netflix shows, I'm like, oh, Arrested Development season 4, no, it's not the best. It's rare that they don't miss a step. Futurama's a good example. Like, yeah, I mean, Futurama's gone and came back.
I think it's like consistently the same show, though.
Yeah.
It just gets canned and...
Yeah, well,
we added on something.
The only
else.
Ones who could can this is us.
Yeah, that's true.
But so we will see you guys next week on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network, and I've got to go record some bumpers.
Ooh-wee.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!